Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Sight Side. My name is James. I'm your host, formerly diagnosed with autism, ADHD, or what do they call that? ADHD. And I'm here today with one of my colleagues from TikTok. Just a little IT guy who I first connected with him a couple weeks ago. I could just scrolling blindly, came across one of his videos, and he did this amazing rant, which I couldn't even tell you what it was about. The dude was freaking hilarious. And I'm like, dude, I got to get this guy in the show. And we actually, this is our second time trying to record this, because the first one, we literally was just 3 hours of us bullshitting, and very little of that was, you know, I wasn't ready to edit it and put it out. So anyway, so
interesting podcast content.
Exactly. So today I got just a little IT guy. We don't even have a structure for today. We're just going to bullshit for an hour about neurodivergence and just living life with autism and ADHD. Anyway, little IT guy, take it away. Introduce yourself. Tell everyone who you are.
Hi, I'm just a little IT guy. I go by Jalig, or J-A-L-I-T-G, or most people just call me J-L, on the internet and on TikTok. I've been in IT professionally for over 25 years, but been doing it myself for 37 years.
Okay, excellent. So when did you first get into being an IT guy?
At my church, actually, when I was like 12, I went to go work at the rectory where all the priests and whatnot live. And they had one basic computer with AOL dial-up, and they were trying to do their AOL-hosted website. And I was the only one that could do any kind of HTML stuff at the time. And so I did their little basic website, and they ended up having, at some point, some kind of cable modem situation put in there within the year or two after that. And I wired up the rectory for the multiple offices that the priests had and the admin and finance office, and did that at like 13 or 14 years old.
Nice. So is this always something that came, like, just one of those, you fall into a niche, which is kind of funny because, like, our, you know, parents' generation were really, you know, because I'm late Gen X, you know, 1980, so that's like very tail end of Gen X, like, brought up by the boomers who really didn't trust technology as it was coming online. Like, right. They were the ones who were running with the Y2K craze. Remember that in 1999 when everyone was freaking out about it?
Yeah.
So that's funny that you were like the go-to guy for like the boomers to figure out the newfangled technology.
Yeah. And that was a bit of a wake-up call to like just the path that I could go that would be kind of like the path of least resistance for me in a career. Having that exposure to things, I mean, when I went to college, I was taking these lab classes that were 3 hours long, and I was done the entire lab in 20 minutes. One of the best things that that professor could have ever told me, what, you know, after a week of me doing this and blowing through his labs and getting them all correct, he said, you know, there might not be much I can help you with in this class, but the thing that will help you learn the most is helping everybody else that's getting stuck on something and understanding the things that they get stuck on, because that is where your mind seems to be, is figuring out all these little things that people get stuck on. And that's what this lab was designed to do. And you're smoking past all of them. So if you're seeing other things that they're getting caught up on, that's going to give you a leg up in the world.
How has that transferred into working in IT professionally?
That's basically what I do every single day with my engineers. I have six engineers under me. And speaking of, they just messaged me right now. Having that that past and that guidance from literally a college professor did actually help me get to where I am now in IT, because staying up with what is tripping people up is kind of the way of the future with IT.
That's interesting. So how does that work as being someone who's, you know, obviously neurodivergent and you're in a leadership position? You said you have like six engineers under you, so you're presumably their direct report. How does that work when you are in a position where, and I guess where I'm coming from with this is I struggle sometimes with delegation because it's hard to take my hands off, you know? I'm a firm believer that if you want something done right, do it yourself. So where do you, as a neurodivergent leader, draw that line?
I don't. I struggle with it every single day.
Yes. Okay.
Every day. Somebody has to pull something off my plate, or I just have too much going on and don't communicate it well. Even being in the position I am, I still have a boss that I have to report to. And then they're like, why isn't this getting done? And I was like, I haven't had time. And well, why are you worried about trying to do it? Because I haven't been able to think of who else can do it successfully or in the amount of time that won't be so aggressive that it makes our profitability with that client go out the window, right? So I could do it in a half hour, but if I give it to somebody else, it's going to take them 3 or 4 hours of research potentially, and then trial and error. So I get hung up on that sometimes, and even with like designing projects and whatnot, I'm supposed to be able to design it, or their expectation of me is to be able to design it as if it were not me, but I don't know what, how, or how long it would take for somebody else to do it. And so what they've now done in the past week, believe it or not, they have given me full rein to design whatever systems I need, which I've been doing in Codex, to help everybody understand the way I do the things so that everybody can be moving at the same higher speed pace.
Right. Try to keep everyone. You're like you go one pace and it's yours,
Right.
and then the rest of the team. So it sounds like, I mean, have you ever run into friction with this over your career?
Yes, yeah, a lot. And I've been through multiple, I mean, I've been with the same company for 15, 16 years or something like that. And there's always been seemingly like this struggle on edge of like, hey, we need you to do all this. We know that you're good at doing this stuff, but we also need you to do this stuff that you might not like. And I do have a bit of a struggle with the ADHD side of things when
Right.
the thing is not as interesting and it ends up on the back burner. And I'm like cranking through all the other things that are interesting, but they're like, we need you to finish this last 3% of this super boring thing because you're the only one that can do it.
Dude.
So then it's like, okay, I have the same problem in my house where I don't finish a project or I start something and I'm like halfway through and I'm like, I already know the end and I already know how it's going to go towards the end. So then it loses interest. It's my entire life.
Right. This is such a thing of ADHD, anything. It's like as soon as the frost is off that pumpkin, you know, like when something stops being like when you stop wanting to do it and start having to do it. And it's like you can almost see where that line is to where it becomes a chore. And
Oh,
you're
for
just
sure.
like, man, it's like I have you know, any big project I've undertaken, and this is even after being diagnosed and being medicated, is the hardest jump is from 90% to 100%. It's whatever the last 10% is on that home stretch that's always has been the biggest challenge.
Yeah. And that's been a thing pretty much, I think, my entire life, including like cleaning my room when I was a kid, right? So it's just been a thing. It should have been recognized a long time ago, but I was only diagnosed with ADHD last year and I'm over 40. So, getting that late diagnosis and then starting to align with the autism side of things, with level one autism, I have been progressively or exponentially better at getting things done. Knowing that I can use the quote unquote weird things like listening to the same song on repeat on my headphones for like 9 days straight because it just vibes with my energy, my beats per minute, whatever's going on in my head, and I don't have to feel weird about it. It's like, oh shit, that's what all these people wearing headphones listen to? Like they just get themselves in a zone and I didn't even know that. Some of them listen to podcasts, some of them listen to white noise, some of them just use it for the noise cancellation. For me, putting it on a nice groovy beat without words, because words will kill me, it really drastically improves my effectiveness.
Right. All right. Well, let's back up for a second. I want to talk a little bit more about your role in leadership. Do your guys on your team know that you're neurodivergent?
They do know I'm ADHD, yes.
Okay. All right, but they don't know about the TISM yet.
Well, there's a few of us that are on the spectrum in there, and
Okay.
we have our own little chat,
Right.
and we call it what was this chat called? It's called TISM Think Tank. There's three of us, so I called it T cubed.
I love it. So what is it? Okay, so with both neurodivergent people and neurotypical minds, both sets on your team, do you find that like how do you, because I know that as neurodivergent people, we relate to each other in what, you know, certain way. Like we just seem to vibe. Where does that leave you with the neurotypicals? And is there any friction between like the neurotypicals and neurodiverse team guy? Like outside of how they interact with you, do
Yeah,
you notice it
absolutely.
when they interact with each other?
With each other, perhaps I don't witness it as much, but the team does seemingly have some struggles when they are paired with the improper people. Like, you can't put two certain people together because they just don't get along, right? And so, unfortunately, I can't run a team like that. I need to have the ability to know that I can put any two people together because they're all doing different things. But the neurotypicals, I do have to be far more careful about when they haven't done something correctly and pointing it out after they've spent 99% of the day doing everything right, and then the one thing they do wrong really hurts their feelings. I have trouble understanding people's feelings when it comes to doing something incorrect, because at least for me, when I do something incorrect, I want to understand the most proper way to do it and the most efficient way to do it. And so when I point it out, I feel like in my head that I'm giving them this, you know, benefit to improve their system. But if I don't first recognize all of the hard work that they did for the day that was great, they get really super defensive that I pick only the things that they did wrong. And they've said that to me. And so I've tried to be better with that. But any of the neurodivergence, I tell them they do something wrong, they're like, oh, shit, I'll get that next time. And, you know, it's like, it's no hassle. But sometimes I forget that. So that makes it a little bit difficult.
Right. It's I guess it's one of those things where we struggle with communication with it. That's wild to me though, because sometimes that's just wild. So they would have more difficult time. Is it just because it's like criticism at the end of the day, or is it like they don't I don't understand? Like, I guess maybe because I'm neurodivergent myself. Like, yeah, okay, you did something 99%. That's fine. If 1% is off, and it needs to be fixed, just that's fine. Fix it. I don't know if I necessarily need the validation of, doing the other 99%, because obviously I've been at work all day. I wouldn't be, if I hadn't done all of it as my supervisor, I would be having a totally different conversation. Go ahead, bud.
I was thinking that some people just need that type of support. Like we have our own ways of needing support. I do believe that on the neurotypical side, there is some sort of support that they need that I've never demanded in my life for making sure that I did something correctly or whatnot. But, there are benefits, at least for me anyways, when I see somebody recognize something that's cool or recognize that I put, 16 hours into a project and couldn't make it on time the next day. And they're like 16 hours into a project on one day and then maybe late the next day. In my head, I have sort of this expectation that, okay, he put in 16 hours yesterday, let him sleep, where the rest of the company wants that communication to happen. But as far as like the neurotypical people, when they're working late, they immediately start to get concerned with their effectiveness the next day when they're still at 80% of the way and it's 7 o'clock at night. And so they're like, I'm not even going to be able to function tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. And they ask if they can have the day off because it's taken so long. But, that is the nature of IT. IT, there really isn't always a set expectation of time unless you're just doing greenfield deployments. But if you're troubleshooting something and you got a broken firewall and you got to stay in there for the night, it has to happen. You have to stay there for the night and you got to commit. Sometimes the engineers have a little bit of a hard time with that. I've not had that hard time because for me, it's just like I have an opportunity to have this experience that no one else is going to have. And I hyper-focus on that part and I'm like stuffing it into my brain library. And then I'll never forget that. And then it'll come up like 6 months later. Hey, remember that time when I had to pull an all-nighter? That sounds like the same symptom. Let's not get burned by that this time. Right. So, it all kind of builds in my head.
Well, so how does that work like on a big project? Because, I have my ADHD side rarely comes with an off switch. So I am no stranger. I mean, working like 16 hours, like if I'm in a project, I want to go until it's done. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily come with an off switch. It's, I've tried to get better about making more healthy decisions just because I'm, 46 years old and I can't necessarily burn the candle on both ends as much as I used to. But it's still hard to, draw that line because I know how momentum works. Okay. Mm-hmm. Especially with ADHD, like if I don't transition correctly, I can fuck my whole day up. There's a joke online about it that you never, ever sit down. Like with ADHD, you never, ever, ever sit down. Once you're up and doing tasks, if you sit down, you're dead. That's going to be it. Yeah. So I understand how momentum goes because it's like the concept of inertia, right? Like inertia, objects like to continue doing whatever they were doing in the first place. So if I'm sitting down, I'm going to be, it takes a tremendous amount of energy to get started. Right away. If I'm already moving, it takes a tremendous amount of energy for me to stop.
Yes.
So it's like this, I don't know, psychological inertia, whatever you want to call it. So how do you handle that as a leader when you have, the type of wiring where you don't want to have an off switch, yet you have neurotypical holistic minds on your team that need a break?
I was in a management position as far as the company goes for all of 2025. And when I had to go between like reading ticket notes and training the engineers versus doing the high level technical stuff, I absolutely could not. The two gears were so far apart that trying to do like the normal reading and the slower pace, like understanding of what an engineer is trying to do versus me trying to figure out something technical to improve or make more efficient, I couldn't switch between those gears. I struggled with it the entire year. So now one of the person who's my boss as far as the management and the structure of the company goes, I was his boss last year. They thought there was going to be all this kind of like drama between him and I or the company with him becoming my boss and me going back under him. There was not. I'm still the technical lead for the entire company, and that's where I thrive. And after him taking over and worrying about like the things that I'm falling behind on, I can just stay in high gear and get so much more done. So the company as a whole understood that. Like they knew I wasn't just goofing around and sucking at it. It was that I just wasn't capable of switching the gear, nor was I capable of really staying focused on something that moved that slow to try to make that slow thing move more efficiently, especially because it had a lot to do with reading, and my reading is god-awfully slow.
That's wild to me. I guess I don't think I've has that ever like hung you up? I don't think I knew that about
The
you, that
reading
you had
part?
like that you because I read very, very quickly. Like I'm the type of person that I don't even like YouTube videos because like they'll put up a YouTube video and they'll talk about whatever fucking bullshit for like 45 minutes with all this fluff that only has about maybe 1 minute of viable information that I need. Right? Like, I don't want to watch a video of someone talking about the article. I'd rather just read the article because I can skim information very, very quickly and find what I need out of it. But I've always been a reader. Is that, I guess I never thought of it. So is that something that's ever like hamstrung you at all? Or are you just like not?
The
Okay.
first book I ever read, cover to cover, was ADHD 2.0 last year, end of last year. First book
Ever?
in my life.
Seriously? Ever?
Seriously, seriously. Summer reading, all the reading back in the day when we were kids. Obviously, I read the kids' books, right? But if we
Right.
talk about like adult reading, I found every shortcut possible, Cliff Notes, whatever the heck it was, to just get through it and get it understood because my reading was so slow. I would read three or four pages in and the frickin' three pages are gone. Absolutely gone. I'd have to start over. And then I would remember as I get through, oh, that's what that was. And, or sometimes I would read it as if it was the first time. And so my girlfriend actually bought this little tool on Amazon, which was something that only lets you see one line at a time. So when you see that one line, it blocks the line above and the line below. And the problem I had in my reading is I'm a pattern recognizer. A visual pattern recognizer and an audio one. But on the visual patterns, I would be reading and all of a sudden like hit the end of a line and be like, wow, look at that. Five lines in a row lined up at the exact same spot. I wonder what the odds of that. Like if one word was different, or look at this staircase, this perfectly separated staircase all the way down.
Yes.
Gone. Absolutely gone. Everything I read in the last 10 minutes is gone.
It's the ADHD. I love it. That's I wonder I could have to do some more research on that. That's interesting because it never occurred to me with but I could understand why you would get distracted over like the whatever font is it's in or what the actual like
Oh man.
typesetting of the things. It's so wild how like ADHD has like different expressions for all of us. But like at the same time, I'm sure you can look at whatever like fucking rat's nest of networking cables are going on with some, server farm and your brain can just make sense of it.
You are 100% accurate on that. Yes. I
Right.
will
That's
not look at that and start to sweat. I'll look at that and know exactly where to start.
right. It's so wild how that works. So I guess it's true that they say like if you meet one person with neurodivergence, you've met one person. Because we
That's
all
right.
are, we have a lot of similarities with cognition, but at the same time, we're all going to have different, symptoms or expressions of how it affects us. That's pretty wild. So when it comes, so let me ask you this. When you first got into, you know, leadership and as a, you know, neurodivergent, you know, someone in management, when you were first given this degree of responsibility, what was, what did you think the biggest challenge was going to be? And now that you've been in this role for a while, what did you find out the biggest challenge was?
It was exactly what I thought, believe it or not. Paying attention enough to what the engineers are doing to be able to give them raises at the end of the year. That was a major struggle for me for like, knowing what they've been doing that was beneficial to the company that they've needed to improve on or needed to align with, exactly what my boss is now doing that I should have been doing last year. But he's got the reporting, he's got a bunch of stuff that was just like natural to him when he got in that position that I never even thought of. I'm like, dude, I've told him so many times, and he's one of the other neurodivergents in our company. I told him so many times so far, and he's 10 years younger than me, that he's doing phenomenal at this position. I've told him I'm proud of him. He's been with the company for 10 years, so we're fairly close. And, you know, recognizing that in somebody that deserves that recognition and letting them know that, like, you know, they're doing something that, you know, something that they might have held me in high regard with being able to do, letting them know that they're significantly smoking any capability I ever had of it, lets them know too about like what their fortes are being neurodivergent. Like, pay attention to those details. Like, dude, you're thinking of things that I was just never able to even consider. And he's like, yeah, but you think about things that I can't consider either. And I said, yeah, but at a completely different level. Technical. You think about things in organizational levels. I don't. I think about it technically organized. You think about it resource organized, people organized. You know, priorities and stuff like that. So he's constantly got that wheel spinning in his head where it just didn't exist for me. Mine is put the fire out. Essentially, I've been a fireman for like 30 years in IT.
Right. Well, I think to a degree, that's like management in general. Like most people, it's just like all they're doing is putting out fires.
Like, I mean, even like in an organization.
Well, yeah, because you do the technical side, but look at your boss does it organizationally. Like he's going to be putting out fires all the, you know, it's just a different, you know, different type of thing that might be burning. But at the same time, it's like, you know, it's always trying to manage it, right? Deal with it.
Right.
Well, that's actually really interesting. And I'm glad to hear that you guys work well together, at least have a really good interface as far as, you know, being able to recognize what lane you're good in, what lane you're not. So when it comes to like looking at your engineers on your team, that's like what metrics do you use for that? I mean, would it just be like that the job gets done, or do you look for different areas where they actually shine, or how does that work? Walk me through your process.
So when a ticket comes in, we have an expectation that can be done within a certain amount of time. Like if it's a spam ticket or whatnot, and the client is like, hey, this is spam. Can you block this domain? We expect that to be done in less than 15 minutes. When somebody spends 45 minutes on it, we're like, why did it take 45 minutes? What did you think that this was that made you have to go further and further down the rabbit hole to investigate this when the domain is clear as day, absolute garbage, and ends with dot on Microsoft.com, right? So they have metrics for certain types of tickets that come in that we've had historically over the last 20 years of existing that take less and less time over time. And if the engineer has previous tickets that are, you know, like say a printer setup or a troubleshooting of a certain server or access, and suddenly they take more time to do it, but their notes don't reflect it. Those types of things are able to be picked up and kind of worked on with the engineer to say, like, what details did you leave out that made you hiccup on this for so long? Because we don't want that throwing off the numbers of what our average response time and resolution time would be for these types of issues.
Okay, so it's like more on a case-by-case basis?
Okay. Or style, like theme by theme, right? More so.
Well, I can understand that you have like department level you know, expectations and metrics that it would be, and then you're like, okay, well, if this, you know, your SOP says this is handled by 15 minutes, and it's a pretty easy metric to follow. So what do you do about like the softer things that might not necessarily fall onto a metric sheet?
The software things.
Softer things like people who are like let's say someone goes above and beyond, like they handle something that isn't necessarily in the follows the direct like SOP for whatever the thing is. Like they find let's say that they're going on one problem and they discover like a second tier consequence for that. They just go ahead and solve that without being asked to. It's just doing little things that are outside of the purview of their normal job. How would how do you see that as a manager?
So we promote that in such a way that allows them to have that exist outside of a different ticket. So they have a ticket that comes in for one issue. Once that issue is resolved, you close it. If there's a secondary issue that comes in, new ticket, they get the same call with an immediate response time. So their numbers look really good. So it's actually beneficial to them that we've designed it to open more tickets for more issues. Cause back in the day we would have clients say, hey, while I have you, and then you'd have to put I had everybody putting a WIHY in the ticket, because if it was a spam ticket and it was supposed to be 15 minutes, but the client was like, while I have you, can we do these 16 other things?
Oh, right.
You know, so that would allow us to understand there's a deviation, but because it happens so much, we just gave them the idea of like, hey, let's start making tickets for every single issue.
So WIHY, while I have you.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So let's all back up for one second, because not all of our listeners are going to speak IT. Okay. Uh-huh. So what's a ticket?
So a ticket is a request to either resolve an issue or put in a request for some kind of change in their system, like a new license or firing somebody or whatever.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. Okay. So is that like I want to go way back up to the church. Okay. So 12 years old, you're helping everyone with setting up their network and the AOL dial up and switching to cable and all that. That mm-hmm. transitions, obviously high school, college, you've this love and passion and natural aptitude for IT followed you through all of this. What was it like for you when you stepped into your first professional role, when you're first actually getting paid for IT?
So I was going to college at the time. Was that one?
I don't know.
I was getting paid for IT.
Huh? We were there.
Yeah, so I had multiple jobs where I had IT responsibilities after the fact, because that's what they learned about me. But the actual one I was hired for was while I was in college. I worked at a NOC, and I controlled the 7-Eleven network throughout the United States and Canada. And at the time, there was like 15,000 nodes. And what a node is a router, an access point, a switch, or whatever. And it's like 5,000 stores. And they had three people on three shifts running, like nine people trying to run that network. And it was because all of their documentation was absolutely terrible. So when they had a router replacement, they would literally have the engineer in the office or in the NOC walk the guy on site, configuring every single line. And they made their own routers. The company that managed 7-Eleven, they made their own routers and shipped them out. And so then they would hire these field techs. And the book would take up an entire resource for half a shift to get one of those swapped out. And when I realized what they were doing, I was 18, I think, at the time. I said, I think this can be done a little faster. Can I work on this one? And this was like second shift at, 2 o'clock in the morning. So they weren't too concerned about it. It was the end of my shift. And if it took too long, it would just go into third and they were fine. So I started working on it. I got them like five or six lines in. All I needed it to have was internet access. And once it had access to the network, I shoved the config file that we had in the backup to it and everything was ready. And the whole thing took a half hour. I was like, holy crap, I need to update every single piece of documentation to do this. So I did that, built an entire process, and inside of 2 months, they cut down every shift down to two people. By the time I was done there, after I think 2 years, because they got bought out by a company in Texas and moved, and I didn't want to move to Texas at the time, they had two people on first shift, one person on second shift, and one person on third shift. So I dropped from nine people to four people in the entire 24-hour span.
I love that. I don't necessarily love people losing their jobs or getting laid off because they're redundant, but I love the fact that you came in and you're able to streamline a process. And I think that speaks to the efficacy of applied neurodivergence, when you could take your just natural ability to identify friction and then eliminate that friction and turn it into flow just naturally. So it's like you're put in a position where you're able to basically thrive. Special interest, which is like, that's amazing.
Yeah. And not even realizing it too, because I was all new on the network stuff. And I had this guy from, I don't know if I can say this, but a thick, heavy, Australian accent, and he had zero tolerance for me. Every time I'd ask him a question, he made me feel like I was the stupidest guy on the planet for even asking him that question. He's like, that doesn't even make sense. Why would you even ask that question? What are we talking about here? We're talking about this piece of equipment, and you're asking questions about this piece of equipment. And I was like, I'm sorry, I didn't actually know those didn't exist, because I was new in the field.
Right.
Right. But, you learn the fastest when you piss somebody off, right? So It and you pay attention more, right? Because if you want, if you know that guy knows a shit, you don't want to make that guy never want to talk to you again. You send an apology email, and I said, "Hey, man, sorry, I didn't want to waste your time on that." And he responds, "Okay, don't worry." And you know, within 6 months, he and I were tag teaming things. He would just tell me what to do at a like a higher level pace, and he didn't have to go into all the details like click this, log into this first, download this file, right? He would just say, "All right, let's do that thing," and you know, it was done. But he learned a lot from me after I was able to find those friction points about why he was so frustrated with working with anybody else on our network. And he was his frustrations were valid because that part of it being three different people on three different shifts, he had to memorize nine different people's names every time they had a major issue. They had to escalate to him, and they all worked completely differently. So I could understand why he would be so irritated to just get questions by dumb people like myself at the time and not work with the high level like team lead at the time. So we go ahead.
I can see that as part of it, but another part is you're, 18 years old, entering the workforce, undiagnosed ADHD and undiagnosed autism, neurodivergent, and this was at a time when, minds like ours were, no one knew who we, we did, we barely, didn't even have names for it necessarily. I
Correct.
think like Asperger's was something that was thrown around a little bit, but it wasn't necessarily, we had no idea. So you're 18 years old, entering the workforce for the first time, asking a question, which I have no doubt in your mind, in my mind, that it was earnest. You're like, okay, you're asking about something, and this guy, not only, I can't say if he was, neurotypical or not, but it, I think it says something about the communication style that a lot of times we will throw a something that's totally out of left field. That might not be relevant to where that person's mindset is, but we see it as something that is, something that is important and it deserves being addressed.
I mean, in a way, that can be the thing, but for me, it was the fact that I had it completely wrong at that time for that example. But there are situations that that exists where you just want to make sure that you account for that. And I work with that a lot with my engineers, especially the neuro, the NDs, because we have a desire for the why and a lot of things and a lot more things than a neurotypical would. The desire for the why can be incredibly distracting if you don't address it. So when any of my engineers ask why, I just assume every single one of them is neurodivergent. It's just easier because I know somebody else is going to be thinking that, especially after they ask it. If I say, "Don't worry about it," I know for a fact that any ND that's in there in that same meeting is going to be like, "Well, I kind of want to know that answer now too." So now I know it's going to be distracting. So I make sure that the whys are answered quickly or that I can tell them that it doesn't exactly apply here, but we can talk about it later. And if anybody has any concerns with that, please let me know or we can talk about it now.
Have you, well, let me ask you this then. Have you run into yourself? Like, as now that you're in leadership, you have a, young neurodivergent employee come up to you and ask you something that is, objectively stupid. How do you handle, how do you handle that?
So we had this engineer. He doesn't work for us anymore. He was phenomenal. He was like a mini me. He didn't have the structure of the length of time in the field, but he had the drive and interest level in the field. But he would make assumptions about things that he only learned in the last like 3 or 4 years, and not take the things that have existed for 20 years into account. So it was a lot harder to work with him, not knowing that he didn't know that type of stuff. And then we would send him on a what we didn't think was a wild goose chase, and it turned into a wild goose chase because some of the things that he would think are the right ways to go about something would be something you wouldn't consider knowing a history of how either Microsoft works or Windows works or whatever. So it was a tough situation. He didn't like having to explain himself, and he just wanted to get things to work. But for anybody that works for me, and they all know this, if you can't explain it, you don't know it. And if you can't explain it to a client, you really don't know it. And so we can't have just engineers trying to guess at things and hoping to get lucky, because a lot of it was like guess and check. And when he would guess at something and get it right, he'd want a pat on the back, but then he couldn't explain himself. So it's not about guessing in IT. It's about making sure you can get it right this time and repeat it next time without having to know that what you did that time that you guessed at it, without having to think that you're going to end up down a rabbit hole by trying to maybe do that one first because you think it's going to be the end all be all for all of the problems that have the same, incident that they report.
Well, I think like and it's probably a good thing that you guys already have like the systems in place and whatnot. Because anyone who's like entering IT right now, obviously there's a shit ton more infrastructure in all areas compared to you entering the field 30 years ago. And you know, look how far we've come. I mean, you started out talking about AOL dial-up, and now we have, you know, fiber. We have like all these, you know, everything's
Yeah, I have
connected
gigabit
all the
fiber in
time.
my house.
Right. Well, like everything's connected all the time. So it's like these super complex systems. But I'm glad that you were able to recognize a young man's or woman, I don't know who they were, but their
Young
you know,
man.
earnestness about it. So let me ask you this. Have you run into anyone entering the workforce now who was maybe earlier diagnosed with neurodivergence, like someone who had, like, let's say maybe they had, they got assessed for autism when they were in middle school, high school, and they were able to enter the workforce with the idea of how their cognition works.
That is my current boss. So he has been ADHD medicated for many years. So he's been able to kind of hone the skills and understand himself and how his brain works, how his focus levels work and whatnot. And so he's pretty consistent because he's been able to get his medications adjusted and kind of get on a path of repetition. You know, kind of what ADHD people need is making that thing repeatable so that you can build the muscle memory for it, because our minds seemingly have a hard time trying to get that to set in, where some people can just have it set, you know, the first time they do it. You know, he's had that for many years and was able to understand my struggles as well. But it was nice to see that, you know, I could say something to him and he'd be like, oh yeah, I remember being like that. You know, so it's the memories or memory lane of those who were medicated early in life, where their struggles, they can remember what it used to be like. Where for me, I can't exactly maintain what it's like to be consistent even on medication right now, because it's still like yesterday, I freaking forgot my medication and now I have a day to recover. So I took it today and I'll start feeling better tomorrow about like my focus levels and whatnot. But like I'm bouncing off the wall today. Luckily, I had something very interesting to work on all day, so I was able to stay focused. But
Get that
man.
the dopamine mine. I got it. That's wild. Well, it's I think it's it, you know it's a it, there's an adjustment process. I had to deal
Oh
with it
yeah.
too. Like I had unmedicated, and then boom, suddenly I have this, you know, I got this prodrug that is giving my allowing my attention to stick on things, and along that, with that comes with the motivation to actually do things. And it was just freaking wild, and it was like a literal light switch flipping. And I think what, you know what it was, I started deep cleaning my house right away. I just wanted to get it. I, for whatever reason, I felt this overwhelming urge to. I got into it, and what really sealed it for me was on the second day, I cleaned off all of my bookshelves, and I have a shit ton of books. Okay. I cleaned off all of my bookshelves, pulled everything down, dusted it, got everything back up again, and I didn't get sidetracked once, because old me would have, I mean, I would have gotten three books into the first one, and I would have started reading. I'm like, oh, I haven't looked at, you know, read this one in years. Let me flip to my favorite part, you know, to this one and that one. I got through the entire thing and didn't get sidetracked once. And it freaking blew my mind, that I did this massive project and didn't fall away. So it's like, but it's hard to deal with that too, because when you're so used to doing things in a certain way, and then you actually get, you know, your to-do list done, and it never takes as much, you know, as much time as you think. You know, it never does, because you're not, you don't have that executive dysfunction anymore. So we get it done. So I get my whole tooth done in like 2 hours, and then suddenly I have all this extra time.
Yeah, I noticed
Crazy.
one of the things I found online back, I don't remember if this was late last year or early this year. It was like a themed set of TikToks, like how long it actually takes. And it was just people doing like random things in the house, like doing the dishes or doing your laundry, folding clothes, right? Because for the ADHD mind, at least for me, if I don't know how long something's going to take, I am not that motivated to start it, especially if it's a chore. But when there is literal videos of people doing things that I would watch to see their approach and see if I can do it a more efficient way, because then I have a game, I have a time to beat. It's like Waze. Like when I start driving and my GPS says it's going to be an hour and 10 minutes to get there, I don't see that as I need to get there by that time. I see that as the time to beat. And so my entire drive revolves around that. And I can stay hyper focused and, you know, just make kind of efficiencies along the way. And if there's some kind of restriction, or especially, you know, where I'm from, there's a high density of highways and byways. So you can bail off the highway and start taking all side roads, and Waze will get you there. It'll just keep updating and saying like, all right, this route's going to be 3 minutes longer than the other one. If you feel like losing that 3 minutes, or you can say, no, it doesn't take 3 minutes longer because I know that light's going to be green for me at this time of day because blah, blah, blah. Right. So my pattern recognition for driving and being on the road is also very high. So I used to drive for Uber. I drove for like 4 or 5 years back 2017 to 2019. I was Uber 2020 actually. I was Uber cowboy. I wore a cowboy hat and I tried to make my hourly rate as efficient as possible, including tips. And so I put party lights in my van along my minivan along the bottom of the van, all the way on the outside. And it had a music sensor by my door that I had to beef up with padding because it needed some kind of deafening because it was too sensitive. And I would throw a song on. People would ask, do you have an aux? I'm like, oh yeah, sorry, I don't, but I have this. And I'd throw something on and I'd wait for the bass to drop. And as soon as the bass would drop, I only drove at night because I was IT during the day. As soon as the bass would drop, I'd hit the button to turn on the thing. The lights would start flashing and everybody would freak out. So I was always trying to focus on, okay, there are people that drive during the day in traffic that are making like $12 to $18 an hour. I averaged $75 to $100 an hour driving for Uber because I was able to time the party spots. I logged where the bar closing times were, and I would check FlightAware when the last plane was coming in for the airport at night, and I would time it with that because then I could be right at the gate or right at the waiting area and get a ride within seconds where everybody else was sitting there for hours waiting for that last plane type of thing. So like everything about driving and patterns on the road was a pretty pretty big motivator for me.
I can relate. I was a trucker for years, you know. I can relate to that, the whole route optimization. And yeah. It's just so wild how we have these minds that will find any system anywhere get dropped into. It seems like we're just hardwired towards optimization.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter like what it, I mean, you did Uber. I mean, who would think about that? I mean, no one, it takes like, you know, a divergent brain would think about, okay, well, timing exactly when the last planes people are hitting the baggage carousel. You know, stuff like that. That's like really, it's the detail oriented bottom up granular data processing.
Is that what that's called? The bottom up processing?
Yeah, that's what you do. That's the autism side. It's the bottom up processing. It's like looking at the details and building it, granular data up to a larger picture. So you did it, you know, built it up to a way of optimizing all your time with tips and whatnot.
Yeah, it was. I was in survival mode. I had my house burned down back in 2011, and we got screwed by the insurance company. We had a public adjuster that screwed us, and they took money that they claimed they were going to be able to build into the cost. So the repairs from the insurance company was like $200K. The private adjuster came in, said it should be $300K, and he's like, well, you know what? You're getting a good deal because the $200K he thought was enough, but now it's minus his 5%. So it was another $10K out the window, and the price didn't go up. So we ended up having to take a bunch of stuff out of them doing the work, and I had to do all the work myself. I did 100% of the electrical in the whole house. My town, luckily at the time, allowed us to, as homeowners, do the electrical. And when he came in, my dad was an electrical engineer, so I had an upbringing that allowed me to know some of that stuff. When he came in and looked at the work, he's like, so who did you have help you? I said, what do you mean? I did it by myself. You didn't have any electrician help you do this? I said, no. He's like, this is better than most electricians' work. I wanted to make sure it wasn't going to be wrong. So I might have taken a lot longer than an electrician would, but you know, the raceways were fine. There was no overlapping things. He's like, well, I can't go back and give you nothing. So here, I'm going to mark this thing on the wall in the stud where your staple is too far away from this box. And now you just have to go fix all those in the house. And I was like, really? He's like, no, but that's what's going to be in the document because it's the only thing I need to put in here because I need to put something. I was like, that's really cool. So I saved 15 grand by doing all the electrical myself.
It's, I think it's awesome, actually. I think it says something about the, and it must have been a great project too, because you're like, you know, feels to that novelty side. We like the challenge.
Yeah.
You know,
I almost died though. I touched the back of the circuit breaker panel myself with my knee on the ground and my heart stopped. And I was like, oh my God, everything was starting to tighten up in me, but my entire air had flown out of my body. So when I missed the circuit breaker, trying to push it back into the panel, and it slipped off because my hands were sweaty and hit the metal contact at the back of the panel, and my knee was on the ground. Everything in my body like compressed and air evacuated out of my system, just like, ooh, and I couldn't even control it. And then I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting dizzy. What the hell? And I felt my hand, my wrist, and I was like, I don't feel my freaking heartbeat. And I was like, oh Jesus. Well, and in like 2 seconds or a second in my head, I kind of was like, well, I stopped my heart by touching the back. So what if I just swing my hand back across the bar again and just jump start it, right? And so as I was thinking that, all of a sudden it was just like huge pound in my chest and it started again. And my entire body felt like pins and needles, like when your arm falls asleep and from you're laying on it, or your leg falls asleep sitting out the wrong way. That was my entire body, head to toe, when it kicked back in like 5 seconds later, maybe 10 seconds later. But I was sweating and panicking, and at the time I was under a deadline. I was like, well, I almost died. Texted my wife at the time and said, hey, still working on the electrical thing, but I did get zapped pretty good. I'm okay. But I got to finish this tonight. So she comes down and she comes into the basement. She's like, what the hell are you doing? She was very nervous, or that was her way of showing her nerves. And I just said I had to keep going. She was afraid that I was still working on it and going to get zapped again. But I already knew that what I did to mess it up. So I cemented that in my memory, kept going, and finished it that night. The
I think
whole house, the entire circuit breaker panel.
that goes back to what we touched on earlier, that we don't come with a fucking off switch. Like, who fucking dies? Like, you stop your heart, messing with electrical panels that you're technically not qualified to mess with anyway, but you do it, get zapped, zap yourself again to restart everything, and then still finish the fucking job. Like, who it takes a divergent mind to do something like that, because normal like a normal well-adjusted person wouldn't entertain that. So
I was
it's
definitely taking risks. I think that's one of
right.
my neurodivergent things, is like the risk taking. Like when
It's
I'm driving fast. I'm the fastest person driving on the road all the
right.
time.
I try not to. I used to be, and then when I got into commercial trucking, I saw firsthand what happens to fast drivers. So I generally drive pretty defensively, but I do have a I'm gonna get in trouble for saying this, but for some routes, sometimes I would have a degree of, I would say, like, moral elasticity when it came to the strict regulations. For science, some of it wasn't like necessarily bad. It was like during COVID, for example, the DOT lifted hours of service re restrictions. Like, normally a driver, yeah, you're only supposed to drive for 11 hours a day, but depending on the commodity, for like medical supplies, emergency grocery supply, livestock, shit like that, the DOT lifted the hours of service. So I basically had it was like it wasn't necessarily with a limit, but whenever we stopped, we had to stop and take a 10-hour break out of it. But there were many times where I just drove straight. I mean, I did a from Laredo back to Cleveland. It's a 27-hour drive, and I would do it straight. Just as long as I did one night, like I could do one overnight, just like double fisting Red Bulls and shit to stay awake. And it's like it was. I don't want to say it was unsafe, because it was maybe a little irresponsible. But again, it was COVID and there wasn't a whole lot of traffic on the road
It
either.
certainly
Like, it was one
wasn't.
of those, yeah. So it was one of those things that it was really, but a lot of companies were taking advantage of that too. So it was, and it also makes me wonder about how, like, and like, I don't want to get political too much, but like the DOT is like all about, well, we have these restrictions and whatnot, yet they were willing to lift these, safety protocols depending on what the commodity was. So if it was really, it was interesting, but still there's a degree of I think there's some like give and take where something is safe, and I think it's a lot different when you're just putting yourself in danger, like zapping yourself, versus if there's a lot of other traffic on the road and putting other people at risk. That's why I would like have to really watch if I was like driving and I was really getting fatigued. I would force myself to pull over, and stop, because it's like literally like trucking is one of the few professions you could do everything right and still die. And you could do
Oh, for
everything on
sure.
wipe out and kill a lot of other people on the road. We see it every day. So it's like really, you have to kind of be cognizant of that. But it is funny because it still flips that switch of not wanting to have an off switch. Just want to get the route done, get the job done.
And that was tough with Uber too, because I drove for them back in the day when they did not have the logged in limits. And so there were times where I drove quite literally 24 hours straight. So I would head out to the hot spots Friday night, about an hour away from my house. And I would go all night Friday night and then transition to a place to sleep at like 5 to 6 o'clock in the morning. I knew this little place behind a Cumbie's or a Cumberland Farms, as some people know it. And it was a little bit of an incline. So I would back my van down into it and I would recline the seat and I would sleep for an hour and then I'd be back on the road. Not having slept at what I consider not having slept at all. That's just kind of a nap, right? I also trained myself to fall asleep within a minute because I've been working 20 hours a day after the house burned down and trying to just make ends meet and not lose the frickin' house. Being able to, do that type of pattern recognition of myself to fall asleep inside of a minute allowed me to get 20 hours of work out of a day with travel to home, that is, and then have 4 hours of sleep and function on that. I couldn't function on three. I minimized the amount of sleep that I needed to be able to function and get through things. But, you know, if I need to fall asleep quickly inside of a minute, I got to be flat on my back, pillow on my eyes, no pillow under my head, and like kind of wrapped tight in a blanket. And I'll be out inside of a minute. And then I'll sleep the soundest for that 4 hours. So it took me like 3 or 4 months to figure out that pattern. But once I did, I'm still using that even today. If I need to fall asleep quick, I know I'm going to snore like a banshee, but I got to do it to get the sleep and it works.
I need some of that magic. I can't fall. It takes me hours to fall asleep at night. I can't. My brain just doesn't shut off ever. It just takes a while. All right. Well, IT guy, we're just about out of time.
Well, thank you.
We're at the end of our hour. You got any parting shots? Anything you want to let the listeners know?
I think one of the things that I am focusing on right now that I feel is kind of beneficial to people in the world right now is a thing that I have written on my whiteboard right behind me. Build what no one has at a price that no one is motivated to compete with. And that's kind of like where my head is at nowadays when with all this AI stuff and whatnot, and just being able to not build a competing product, but think about it in a way that helps a lot of people at the same time and reduces the labor efforts behind everything that you're doing. And you can make a lot of people you work with really happy.
That's amazing. All right. Well, listen, thanks for coming on the show. This was awesome. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. We appreciate you coming in. Everyone, I appreciate you listening to another episode of The Site Side. We're going to get this up. It's Thursday. We'll have this up. I will have another one up on Tuesday, hopefully. We'll be all right. I've been meaning to get out a solo episode. Anyone in the Cleveland area, we are hosting the first ever NeuroSpicy Happy Hour coming up on June 16th. It is going to be at Pins Mechanical on the west side of Cleveland around West 25th from 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. We have tickets available. It's going to be a two-hour networking event. It's the first ever networking event specifically designed for neurodivergent professionals in the Cleveland area. We're going to have a burrito bar. It's catered by Ohio City Burrito. 2 hours of great fellowship, great, you know, we got games, we got burritos. I will drop a link in the show notes to get tickets for anyone who's interested. And that's all we have for this week. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of The Site Side. We'll catch you next time.